Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Fourth and final hour here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Don't forget to go to our Twitter page at 1025 The Game to vote on our Nashville sports bracket. We're trying to figure out the best Nashville athlete in the last 30 years. We will wrap things up tomorrow. Right now, we're down to our final four. Steve McNair, the one seed, versus Shea Weber, the two seed in the Tim Corbin region. They are going against each other today. Eddie George over on the right side of the bracket in the Phil Bredesen region against Pecorine in the David Poyle region. Steve McNair's in the Jeff Fisher region. Those were our four regions in our bracket. And one of those names you just heard, Tim Corbin, is now with us, Vanderbilt baseball coach. Tim, good afternoon. How you doing?
Doing fine, D.
Hate to say it, but David Price was in your region as the one seed representing. We had a great conversation with him last week, and he lost by the slimmest of margins to one Frank Wycheck. So he was our only one seed to be upset to this point.
Well, yeah, he certainly was a good one and is a good one for sure, but Frank was too, and Frank was in such a celebratory moment for Titan football, among many moments. But I can understand.
Tim, when you first took this job, what were your initial thoughts when you took this job and you and Maggie were going to move your family to Nashville?
You know, I don't know if we really had any outside of the fact that during that time, and one of the reasons we chose to be here was academics and baseball were mixing very well. You had programs when I first started like Rice and Notre Dame and Stanford that were flourishing with academics and baseball, and we thought being the one private school in the SEC, we thought that was possible here. And the day that I did come, we spent the day with Todd Turner, and Maggie sat in the stands for most of it. And that night before we went to dinner, I just recall she goes, "This feels right. This feels like a good place." And we had no knowledge of Nashville, none whatsoever. And to feel like where we were then and where we are now, and how we feel about Nashville. I mean, it you get to a certain point, I guess, sometimes when you're a coach, that you think, okay, well, this is where we are. This is our home, and it is. It felt like a home, but it's felt like a home for a long period of time, and that's because of the people.
Yeah, and that's why I asked, because today it's much, much easier. You know, Nashville's become the hot thing, and, you know, yeah, over the last 4 or 5 years for sure has been this massive spike. But I'm asking you, going back to that day, which is interesting.
Yeah.
So Maggie said it felt right, other than, as you said, the academics, and it was the SEC and baseball. The program, you know, wasn't, you know what you were taking over. It doesn't look like anywhere near what it looks like today. Why did it feel right to you guys at the time?
I think it was the environment. I think the environment is people and place. And when the place feels right in terms of the school itself, the city, the neighborhoods, and then the people, you start integrating yourself with the people. And then, you know, someone said it a long time ago, and I've said it after it. It feels like a city in jeans. It just feels like a very comfortable place. And it is. It's always felt that way. And you get away from it. And even when I go back to the Northeast, I mean, Northeast is home for me because that's where I was raised. But when I'm there for a short time, I go, okay, and now I got to get home. And then the next thing you know, my mom and dad follow us here. And my dad's 90 and my mom's 85. And I talked to my dad today. He goes, "I can't wait to go home." And I go, "Dad, you are home. You're in New Hampshire right now." He goes, "No, Nashville." Mm. So it's like, you know, those feelings have just been perpetuated just because of involving our family members. And then you think of all the players too, D. I don't mean to expound on this, but all the players that stay here. and just live in Nashville. I mean, there's been many people that feel the same way we do.
I want to know how you'll answer this, because we've had so many conversations over the years, but I don't remember you ever touching on this, because you've always been open and very candid about things. And these guys we've been having on, David was very open and candid about his conversation with you his freshman year. And you've told the story before, I realize that. But Mookie Betts came on last week and told us, you know, he thought, you know, he wanted to go a different direction, that he – it was kind of like when they all get to 18, it's like that's when they hit, you know, weird things happen for them. And Ari Dickey came on here and has told his journey. We love the stories. Everybody's got a journey to how they get to this point. What did you ever have, and that crossroads, right, where you had the fork in the road and you had to go right or left? What was your fork in the road in your career?
I knew what I wanted to do, but the fork in the road was I was done at Ohio State. I was done with my master's degree, and I was a part-time coach there, you know, a volunteer coach, for lack of a better word. And the head coach came up to me at the time, and he said, Tim, he said, I want to replace you with a former player of mine. And I didn't know why I wanted to do it, but he just wanted to replace me, and he just had spot for two guys, and it was right in the middle of the term. We were getting ready to play in the spring. And I said, I don't even know what I said to him, but I was left without options. I didn't do anything. And so I had my Ford Escort at the time. I had finished my master's degree, and my advisor was helping me at the time trying to find other options, but I didn't have one. And so I was basically, I didn't tell my dad and mom that I wasn't going to do it, because I knew my dad was going to say, get back to New Hampshire and you can get in the automotive parts business with me. So I just kind of lied to him and said, I'm going to stay at Ohio State, which I wasn't. But I drove around the country, and I say around the country, I did. I drove around the country for like 2 weeks, and I ended up on the doorstep of the athletic director at Wofford College, Danny Morrison. I just, on a whim, on a Sunday morning, and my Ford Escort was packed, and I said, and the only reason I did is because my advisor told me that Wofford may have something available. So rather than call, I just showed up in his doorstep and knocked on his door, and Danny would tell you the same thing. I was unshaved, and I said, introduced myself, and I said, I just want to work for you. Don't even have to pay me. And he didn't. He made me an intern in fundraising, and I became an assistant coach in baseball. And I lived up in a dorm, on top of a gym with 40 other beds that was used as a visiting team room. And Danny Morrison went on to be the president of the Carolina Panthers and so on. Special guy, but. That was the turning point. You gave me an opportunity, and no money, just an opportunity. I stayed there for a year, and the next thing you know, he was the one that made the phone call to Presbyterian and said, this guy can start your baseball program. He goes, I've been with him half a year, and I know what he's capable of doing. And, you know, from there, it just kept moving.
Wow, what a great story. Tim Corbin on the line with us. There's no manual on how to handle a David Price situation, or all the situations you've had to handle as a head coach, the right thing to say, the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. Where did you learn that from? Where did you learn this whole family, this culture that you've built at Vanderbilt? Where did that come from?
I just think it's learning and understanding empathy, I think, which is a big part of human interactions and teaching and coaching and certainly any endeavor. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, you know, whether you're watching what's on TV right now and how people are handling situations. And, you know, because really what we're in right now is a very difficult moment, but I've always thought in these moments right here, this is when you need to give the people you're around the face, the best face they need, a strong face, you know, whether it's, you know, leadership position by our president, government, whomever, you know, that's where you need to give people your strength. But while you're giving people your strength too, you also need to be empathetic towards their interests. And I think, you know, in competition sometimes, you know, I've learned this too, in competition, I'm not the most empathetic person, but if you remove competition and that just becomes the teacher in me and the kids, then I think empathy is a big part of what I do. And I'm glad at some point in turn I've learned that. And I think it's so important is start understanding other people's views and thoughts. I mean, there was a young man who called me yesterday, and he's on our team, and he's interested in transferring. And in such a mature way, he was telling me why. And I said, you know, I understand that. I do understand that, and I understand your reasoning. And as much as I want you to stay here, I understand that what you want to do personally. And I think you just have to, at certain points, whether it's your own kids or whether it's your players or whether it's anyone else that you work with on a daily basis, is just be a very open listener to how they feel, and then respond in a way that's going to help that person so that they can benefit your program or they can benefit the situation. And I've continued to learn that as time has gone on, trying to just be very open-minded about situations rather than closed-minded and only one thought.
We're talking to Tim Corbin, head baseball coach at Vanderbilt. And Coach, I want to ask, first of all, before we get back into, you know, questions for you, tell mm-hmm. people what you and Maggie are doing right now on social media. I think it's really cool to recognize some of the people that are out there every day doing some things for us that, you know, sometimes we can't even comprehend. We know in our minds we need to support them, but it really hits home when we see some of the things that you guys are putting out there.
Well, I appreciate that. It was just an idea that it was kind of stimulated by an email that I received from a doctor who is our family doctor over at Vanderbilt Medical Center, and he just was trying to think of ideas to build the morale of the people that are around. And I could clearly understand where he was coming from, because where I am situated right now in isolation in the office, no one here, I can see medical people walking across the street and so on, and just looking at the body language, I understand, I kind of get a feel of what they're doing. But I wasn't on social media, and the reason I started getting on social media again was because of Tony Pack, who was a season ticket holder who passed away a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to honor him. But right after that is when I got the email from our doctor, and I just told Maggie what he was thinking, and Maggie woke up, and it was that Monday, and she said, I think I've got an idea, and she told me what it was, and I thought, okay, how can we do it? And then I saw an old Topps card that I had, and I thought, maybe we can honor him like in a kind of a baseball card format. So I did it. I created the artwork for it at first, and Maggie said, that's good. And then I sent it across the street to our athletic department, and Sean Sen, who does a lot of our designs, he designed something that was better than what I had, which I'm grateful for. And then we just put it to use. And basically what we've asked is from all the medical centers around here to develop a starting lineup every week where you just introduce someone who's working and explain to just the general public where that person's from. Are they a mother or are they a father? What hospital are they working with? What do they do? Doesn't have to be a doctor. It could be someone who has an ancillary position in the medical field. Because as you can see, I think it was Saturday or Sunday, I did the valet crew. And the valet crew was essential because not only what they do, but also they were taking temperatures for the people coming inside the hospital. So there's a lot of valuable people, and it's certainly their season now. It's always their season because they take care of us all the time. But now the spotlight's on them because it's just such a crucial time where they're saving lives. And there's probably so much bedside manner that they're involved with just to trying to keep the morale of other people going. And I thought, wow, this is a great way potentially to build their morale because someone has to look after them. So I've enjoyed doing it, and just do it every night and then send it out the next day on Twitter and Instagram. And it's been personally fun for me and another way to share some experiences with other people.
Yeah, it puts a human touch on it. I like that aspect of it. We're talking to Tim Corbin, head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodore baseball team. And Mitch Light from The Athletic is doing a big article, and I don't want to spoil all that he's doing, but it goes back to the roots that you put down in your early years as the coach. But I do want to ask about one thing, because I thought it was interesting. People always talk about a new coach coming in and wanting to instill their own culture, you know, build the foundation. And he got some great feedback from some of the players he talked to about the first time you addressed your team when you became the coach, a first-time head coach in the SEC. Tell people how you tried to come in and make your first impression.
Well, I think the terminology I used with him was more about blending, just blending my personality into theirs, because I think there's so many times where when you are hired as a coach, you come in and it's almost like, okay, I'm here to change the culture. And the thing that you have to look at, maybe some more empathy, is, hey, listen, the kids didn't choose you. And you're there, and some of these kids are in their sophomore and junior and senior year. They chose another coach, but now they're getting you. And when you feel like you come into a program and, okay, I'm changing the culture, those are someone else's kids. Well, they're not someone else's kids. You signed up for them. And I think my step-parenting background helped me in that way, because it was really the reason it took me a while to, you know, I wanted to marry Maggie within, I think it was a year or 2 years. And the reason we didn't, it was just because of the girls. It was just like feeling out that situation and not trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. It was just trying to balance everything, because I understood that in order for them to have a relationship with me, they needed to trust me first. And I really think that when you're a coach or a teacher and you go into a classroom or you go into any locker room, the first thing that you need to do is you need to blend yourself into the personalities of the group. You can have standards and values, but at the same time, just be understanding of what that group's going through so that you can develop trust. And if people don't want to be a part of that, that's okay. But at the same time, rather than force feed yourself upon people, you know, just blend yourself in. And in time, it'll work or it might not work. But change is difficult, and change is extremely difficult for what you mentioned as you started this conversation with 18 and 19 and 20-year-olds, because they're very, very emotional. And when you're a leader, you're the older parent. And as an older parent, you should take a back seat even though you're in the front seat. And taking a back seat just means being empathetic of the feelings and the emotions of the people that you're about to teach.
David Price had such a great account with us last week, talking about the meeting he had with you after the first fall, which is it's a well-told story. But, you know, here we are, you know, almost this is a great time almost to appreciate history. We go back through some of these things because there's great insight involved. But he said, you know, he talked about chart of pitchers. He was 15th on a list of 15, and he was ready to just maybe throw his hands up and do something else. But did you have a sense when he came in to talk to you that day that that's the direction he was going to go with you, that he maybe wanted to take his life in a completely different direction?
I did, and I certainly didn't want him to do that. But the two things: his dad called the night before, so I knew something was up. And then when he came in, his eyes were, you know, you could tell he was very emotional. He was crying before he came in. He was crying when he was telling me the story. So he was very emotional about what was going on. So I knew right then, because he was emotional, that's where his words were based from. So I knew that if I could settle the emotions down, we could get really to the impetus of how he felt. And we did. But at the same time, I challenged him at the beginning, because when he told me what he wanted to do, I told him, I said, I think that's a great decision. I think you should leave here. And I said, I think you should work. And I said, I think junior college would be good. I said, I think that would be a great place to go, because you can't handle it here. And when he heard me say that, his emotions went away. It was almost like you brought out now the competitive side of him. And the reason I did that, and I do it with certain kids, but I only do it with certain kids that I know can handle it, is because I want to see their competitive side. And if a competitive kid comes back and says, internally goes, I'm not doing that. Well, of course you're not. You know, that was your emotional side speaking. Now your competitive side, your real side, the side that really describes your fibers of what you are, that's what you're speaking to. So now that we're on the same level now, now we can talk about what we're really going to do. And what we're really going to do is not go to junior college or not work fast food. You're going to stay here and you're going to get through this. And that's what it came back to. But that took about an hour. It took about an hour and a half. And when he was done with that conversation, he made the decision. I didn't make the decision. I helped him, but he made the decision based on, you know, how I approached him. I approached it with empathy, but at the same time, I told him that, yeah, you should do that. Yeah, this is too much for you. But then you got right into his competitive side, and the competitive side was, you know, I was looking for sympathy, but you are not giving me any sympathy. I'm staying here, and I'm going to show you that I'm the best pitcher. He went from 15 to 2 in a matter of a month in terms of our pitching staff. So that was I'm just glad that kid never left, because if he took the other side, we're certainly not talking about this story.
I'd say it worked out.
Yeah, me too.
Tim Corbin is with us, the Vanderbilt baseball coach. And as I listen to you tell that story about whether it's David Price or another player, and then I relate it to everything going on in our world right now, I think sometimes we all everything has to be black and white, that we have to have either this is the right answer or this is the wrong answer. But what I've done myself is I've stepped back lately and said, you know what, maybe we don't know what the right answer is, and we're not going to find it for a while. We just have to take this day by day. Do you feel like that you see that sometimes in coaching and then with everything going on today?
I think, bingo, I think you're exactly 100% right. We just got to take this day by day. I think that's the best way we can approach it. And you can see even the smartest of smart people throughout the country, they want answers to a question, and there are no answers to a question right now. The questions are they're all out there, but there's so much mystery to what's happening that we just have to methodically go day by day by day, and we're not built for that because we haven't lived that life at all, and it is difficult to do. It's difficult for anyone, but at the same time, I hear about sports like you do, and you hear about government. And when I think about it, I just say, yeah, that's all important. There's no doubting any of that. But in my way of thinking, the most important thing is to get young people back in school. That's the most important thing, to get the educational systems moving again, because really what you're talking about is kindergarten or pre-K or kindergarten and then grade school and then junior high and high school and then college, because that's really the foundation of our country. And if those people are getting back into rhythm again, then what you have is you have parents and adults, and they have the ability to get back and work again. But really, it's those young children, that it's the grouping of young kids that's the most important thing right now. But that, hey, listen, that's not even going to be decided for a time. And I think, like we all are, we're just in a tough position. And, you know, I want to give my kids answers, but I can't give them answers to anything, nor do I want to act like I know the answer, because no one knows what the answers are. But I think some of these things where people are putting a lot of energy into them as if they know what's going to happen, and baseball in Arizona and certain things like that, does it even really matter? It doesn't matter right now. I think the most important thing that matters is the health of our society. And as our health gets better, and as we moderately move closer towards better health, then I think a lot of these things will be right in front of us, and then the answers will be a little bit easier to ascertain.
I don't know if you even have an answer for this question yet, but how much do you think your kids from this team that were so looking forward to defending a national title and trying to do it again and all the things that go through a season, being able to have those experiences, and now they're not because of all of this. The season is done. How much do you think they will be able to learn and to take away that not only is going to help them in their athletic careers, but in life in general?
Well, I hope they do. I mean, I hope they learn a lot from this experience, because I think that's the challenge. I think a lot of them can look at this situation and say, how can I reinvent myself? What are the things I can do right now that I've never been given time to do ever before in my life? How can I reinvent myself? And I think, you know, whether it's reinventing themselves, reinventing how they think about certain things, I think this is a great opportunity for a lot of people. And it's not to make light of what's going on, because that's not what's happening. But at the same time, there's a pocket of time here that we've never been given before. It's almost like God said, you know what? Everyone go to your room. Just go to your room, and you've got to, you're grounded. And now you say, I've never been grounded for this length of time. Well, you know, now that you've got it, let's make great use of it. And I think that's those are the things. Those are the answers I've given the kids. It's more of a challenge, and find ways to reinvent yourself. Do something that you've never done before that will make you better as a person, and that will make you better as a teammate, and as a teammate in your own home first, but then as a teammate as you move away, because there's so much opportunity for so many things. And, you know, beyond webinars and Zoom calls and things like that, you know, let's get beyond that. You know, it's just, I think individually, when we start looking at ourselves internally, what we can become and how we can reinvent ourselves, I think those are the things that these are great opportunities for us right now to kind of learn and watch what people are doing around us too. I think from a leadership standpoint, we can start to look at people and how they're acting in these situations and what matters in life. And I think it's all important.
Yep. Well said, Tim. As always, you guys continue to be safe, and thanks for carving out a little bit of time today for us. We enjoyed it as always, and we'll talk soon.
You guys are nice. Thank you very much, guys.
All right, that is Tim Corbin, Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, by the way. He was a part of this incredible group that's going in. We'll have to wait and see when they're going to actually do that this season, but well-deserving for Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Good stuff. Tim Corbin, as always, we appreciate his visit. We put out a brain teaser today. It's made people angry, and now people are even trying to cheat. I mean, I've caught some cheaters. People are coming up with their own graphics.
Too.
They've changed the pool balls, and it's just not right. Is that where we are today? If you can't come up with the right answer.
You can't doctor it. Doctoring the photo is just that. You can't do that.
Just so out of line.
And when's the last time you played pool and there was an 18 ball? You don't say 18 ball corner pocket. But somebody did try that. They did try to pull that stunt. Does make the problem a little bit easier when you do that.
Of course, I sent a GIF their way, and they sent a GIF back saying, you don't know that, you can't prove it. Yes, I can. Actually.
I think you can.
Yeah, actually, I can. Just to show you the significance of the draft, I was, you know, with the draft just around the corner. In 2017, I saw Pro Football Focus put this out. This just goes to show you how a draft can literally change a franchise, not just one pick. The 2017 draft class of the Saints, have you guys seen this Pro Football Focus just put out there?
I have not.
They had two first-round picks, a second-round pick, and a third-round pick. And with those four picks, the third-round pick was Alvin Kamara. That's turned out pretty well, right?
Yeah. He's been good.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Their second round pick was their starting safety, Marcus Williams. And the two first round picks were Marshawn Lattimore and their big left tackle. That was their two first round picks. Of course, Lattimore is a fantastic corner in the league, and they got a stud tackle out of it. So they turned that draft class, just their first four picks, into, you know, key players. You know, obviously they still had Drew Brees and what have you, and they've done a pretty good job at the receiver position too, as we know. They have arguably the best wide receiver in the league as well. But it just goes to show you, you know, a draft can change a franchise. And oh, by the way, the Titans took Derrick Henry. Now, you could say that they had three second-round picks, and you need to make a lot of hay in that second round. One was one of the biggest flops we've ever seen with one of those picks. One is Derrick Henry, which happened to be the final pick of the three second-round picks. And the other was okay, serviceable, right, of the three second-round picks that they took. But Derrick Henry was certainly a fantastic second-round pick. It just goes to show you the importance of the draft, and that's what the Titans are facing here very, very soon. Can they keep this thing going by having a couple home runs in this year's draft?
I think that's a really interesting recap of the three second-round picks, because I wonder what the track record is if you just picked at random three second-round picks from three different teams, from one team in the same draft, from one team over three consecutive years in the same draft. I wonder if it wouldn't be pretty close to that, where one guy becomes a really good, solid player, maybe even a star like Derrick Henry. One guy becomes a steady role player, nothing spectacular like Johnson. And then the third guy is a guy that just, you know, it doesn't work out for whatever reason. I wonder what the batting average is. Like, what's the league average of any three second-round picks?
I'd love to know that. That's a great question.
Yeah. I mean, they covered literally the entire ground, right? A star?
Yeah.
Maybe the biggest flop or dud in franchise history, and then a guy in between, right?
Role player, just a nice, serviceable
role player. Not a star, not a dud.
I didn't see him go. I mean, I liked Austin Johnson, and now he's signed with the Giants, I think. But
Floyd Rice used to make this point a lot. In fact, when Floyd Rice came under a lot of heat, and he was in the last couple of years of his tenure as the Titans GM, and a lot of people were getting on him. He actually, and this would be an interesting thing for him to recollect, he gave us a binder, because remember, he was doing a weekly show for us, and he didn't do it, you know, for us to ask him about it. He didn't want to try to toot his own horn. He wasn't going to defend himself. But he wanted us to know, you know, where his picks related to the entire league, right? So he had a study done, and he came in with this really thick binder and gave it to us and said, you know, here's where our draft picks compare to the league. Like, that, you know, is the player still in the league that we drafted? You know, he's on our team still. Or B, he's not on our team anymore, but he's still in the NFL. In other words, on Austin Johnson, right? He does well enough as a role player. He earns a second contract, but he's maybe too expensive for the Titans to keep. He moves on. Well, that's still, you know, a pretty decent pick. And then there's everybody's got the flop. So, you know, he was trying to prove that his batting average was overall pretty good and better than average of a lot of teams, right? Even though when you get scrutinized in your town, right, everybody wants you to have home runs up and down the board, right? And they're going to emphasize the picks you screw up, and they're going to say, well, this guy was your first-round pick, and, you know, he hasn't become anything special. But I thought that was a really interesting thing. It changed my perspective on how drafts work over the long haul.
Yeah.
Yeah. The home runs.
Do you remember that, Darren? Did you get that binder?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do remember that. It's pretty interesting.
It was color-coded. It had a lot of stuff.
Those are my favorite kind of
books.
Floyd
did an hour with you guys, is that right?
Yep, every Friday.
Yeah, every Friday.
5 o'clock hour every Friday. And no matter where we were, if he was in town, he showed up. If we were at a car dealership, we were sitting at a church, we were at Walmart, Floyd Rice was
thinking
there.
Church. Well, I don't know. Why were you thinking church, Dan?
Well, he got lost story? At one Greek church in town. And
yes.
I was tasked with, look, I need you to go find Floyd Rice. We're about up against it. It's almost 5 o'clock. He's here. I just don't know where he is. So I had to go because it was a big festival. And so
I can hear that. So.
And he was trapped in the gymnasium where they had a bunch of stuff in there. I don't know. I think they were like tables where they were kind of like booths and tables where they were selling stuff. And
let's just say that they were extremely honored that Floyd was there, and they were very excited
happy
to show him everything that was going on. Yes.
And Floyd,
so they had him on a grand tour.
Yeah, he's just like going along with the tour. And here we are. It's 4:59, and it's time for him to be on the air, and he's just walking around taking a tour of the church. So I had to go get him and say, Floyd, we got to go do a radio show. Sorry, folks. Show's over. Now we got to go do the other show. But that was fun. Yeah, I mean, he showed up. I remember one time, I don't know why this sticks out in my head, but it was the year of the Ben Roethlisberger draft, who played at Miami of Ohio. And
so
I remember
04?
Us talking, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember us talking to him about Big Ben. And we were at a car dealership, I think down in Murfreesboro. Floyd showed up, just like always, Friday at 5 o'clock. He was there at a dealership in Murfreesboro. And here he is, the GM of the Titans. And I remember us talking about, for whatever reason, I remember us talking about Ben Roethlisberger. But it's a tough job. But, man, I'll tell you what, it is. There are huge payoffs, and it's got to be so weird, because really we get to play fake GMs, right, as in our fantasy leagues. And isn't it so satisfying when we have that home run pick, but also how dejecting it is, how dejected you can be whenever you look back and you're like, oh gosh, did I really take so and so in that round? Oh, woof, that one was brutal. What a horrible pick, right? And they all play that game. On, you know, for them, that's real life. For us, it's what we, you know, it's why we call it fantasy. It's fantasy, but we get to live a little bit in their world, a lot less at stake. But, you know, we all get to try to pretend to be GMs when we do our fantasy drafts every year, whatever sport it may be. And we know how tough it is. We get a little glimpse into their world. Not easy.
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's funny, you bring up the 2004 draft. Of course, I'm like, okay, who'd the Titans take that year? They didn't have a first-round pick, but they did have 3 second-round picks.
That's probably why we were talking so much to him about first-round players, because they didn't have one. And he could be a lot more open talking about it.
Do you remember who they took with those 3 second-round picks?
Oh, so here's a perfect example, right, of what we're talking about?
Yeah.
This will be a test case.
How ironic that...
Well, Ben Troop was one of them.
Yep, he was the first.
So Ben
overall.
Troop from Florida was... were their picks? Do you remember?
Defensive end, Odom, is that his name?
That was the third of the three picks.
Antoine Odom?
Yep.
From Alabama?
Antoine Odom.
57th overall. Troop was 40th overall, and the next one was 42nd overall.
Oh, that's right. They went bang, bang. That was the defense, a guy on defense, right? That was the defensive. He was an end. I don't think
Travis LeBoy.
Travis LeBoy.
That's
it.
Travis LeBoy.
Travis LeBoy, who went on to sign a big deal elsewhere.
Yeah, and so did Odom.
So I think you're all three.
Yeah, those were some solid picks. Those three. I would say
Antoine Odom would be a guy that Floyd would probably admit that they wish they would have kept around.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Travis LeBoy,
so
I would say
you had no busts, right? You had no Derrick Henrys, but you had no busts. You had three guys who were in the league for a good while.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that's what...
They had 13 picks in that draft.
That's what Floyd would have said, right? He would have plopped the book down and said, see... They weren't stars, even though Travis LeBoy got paid really well. And I
Arizona?
Think Odom did, too.
Yeah.
No. Is that where he went? I thought he went to the Rams. LeBoy went to the Rams?
Maybe. Antoine Odom went to
I
the
want to
Bengals.
Say he was on the Eagles at one point, too, wasn't he?
No, maybe you're right. Maybe he did go to the Cardinals.
I think he went to the Cardinals right after the Titans. Yeah. He signed with the played 1 year at the Cardinals.
Concussion problems.
Yep.
Yeah, he did. He definitely had concussion problems. So
and then Antoine Odom went to the Bengals, I believe.
Yep, that is right. Yeah, and then didn't he go to the Dolphins?
Yes. That sounds right.
No, maybe not. Maybe he was just with the Bengals. Either way, I thought both of those guys were kind of like they were good in their system, but as we saw when they left, they just really – and I know, like you said, LeBoy dealt with concussion issues, but I think Odom and LeBoy, they were more system guys. They fit well into the Titans
Odom
system.
Went to Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
For three years.
Yeah. That's right. He didn't go to Miami, but there was a prime example.
Ben Troop. We could write a book on Ben Troop, who we've enjoyed talking to at – SEC media days because he flashed brilliance, right? He would have some plays where you're like, wow, this guy could be incredible. But it just never happened consistently.
That is correct. All right, we'll come back, and we will wrap up Tuesday's edition of Darren Donick and Chase next. Kind of going back on what Tim Corbin told us that we all can agree on. It's just none of us know. So that's why we've kind of talked about, I don't know why these leagues or entities, why people have come out and said, and, you know, we've learned in the last month of, you know, a date or a time. It's just there's so much uncertainty. You can't do that. I don't know if you guys, we haven't really touched on this. MLS has said that, you know, they were hoping to return in mid-May. Now they know that that is extremely unlikely. MLS is a prime example, right? Weren't they, who was it, the Atlanta United guy? Was it the president, right? He said, we're going to play our entire MLS season. Remember when he said that? I was like, wow, really? Like, you know for sure you're going to play, you're going to get every game in this entire season. It's just, it was so early to say that. I don't know if you guys have seen, we also haven't talked about this. The Chinese Basketball League has now, you know, came back and said, yeah, maybe a bit aggressive. We're not going to be back when we said. Now we're kind of targeting July as our return. And by the way, Chinese,
I haven't read the specifics
China's
on that one,
us.
But it looks like they had a setback, right? They had it, but they had some sort of setback, which has hurt them.
But they were set to try to come back this month. And now they've come out and said, it's probably going to be more like July, which does scare me a little bit because they're months ahead of us. And if they're now targeting July, what does that mean for us here?
I just think it's we don't know. And I know, like, it, you know, with them giving timetables and saying, we hope to be back by this, that for some people, like, why are you saying that? Because you don't know. That bothers me. And then there are some that, you know, hear that and go, okay, well, I'll hold on to that. I'll hold on to that hope. I just think it's all about how you deal with those things as an individual. But the bottom line is they don't know. No, nobody, it's like we were talking about with Tim Corbin. There's not a right answer. And nobody knows how to give an answer that's even anywhere near close to right at this current time. So that's just kind of how I look at it. I know the NHL released a statement that the self-quarantine will continue through at least April 30th. And that's
no surprise there.
Yeah, no, yep. I mean, that's on par with everything else going on in the country. I mean, the governor in our state yesterday said that it was supposed to expire today and it's been extended to April 30th. And my guess is it probably gets extended again at some point.
No doubt.
That's just, that's the world in which we live. And I know it's easy to get discouraged and all of that, but it just, you kind of have to take it day by day, like Tim Corbin was saying. That's really the best way to go about it.
Yes, they had a setback, Willie, but my heart did sink a little bit with that news today coming out in the last hour or so that the Chinese Basketball Association is saying, probably more like July. I'm like, oh,
they were the most ambitious
yes.
to start with, right? Trying to crank it back up, but they've had to push it back now two or three times. One of the things in the article that it points out is that they're having trouble getting a lot of their players back to China because they went home, right, and not knowing how long they were going to have to stay home, and now there's travel bans that are keeping people from entering the country. So there's a lot of teams that have no way of getting all of their players, and they don't know when they can get them there. So that I think that's part of the reason. That's part of the setback there.
Do we know if that's a problem in hockey?
You know, I have not heard specifically because, and the reason you bring that up, I think, Darren, is when the league did issue an initiative, this was way back in March, basically saying, or maybe a couple weeks, maybe it was a week or two after we first came home as a group, they said, you know, stay at home. And then they said, well, this is going to be long enough to where if you need to go home, wherever that is,
yes.
you can go.
Yes.
Right? I don't know how many players elected that option. Right, I haven't seen anything written about that. Have you?
That's where I would be very curious to know how many guys went back to Europe.
Well, didn't they kind of pull back on that because around the time that they said you can go home, travel bans went in place.
It became pretty difficult to get home, even if you wanted to.
But some did. But some did.
I would imagine some did.
Because I'm pretty sure, gosh, I hate to say this, but I'm pretty sure I saw where Ida, who we've enjoyed our conversations with, Julie and Ida Ekholm, did she not go back to Sweden?
I have no idea.
I think she did, and it may have been just for a short period of time, but I thought I saw where on social media where she did go back home briefly. But I could be wrong on that. But I would be curious to know how many around the league, not just Predators, but, I mean, around the league, if the NHL, you know, how many of them are back at their home? You know, not here in the States, somewhere, wherever they came from. I wonder how many chose to go back to their native land. Right?
I'd love to know the answer to that because I don't. Because I remember the NHL said they could, and then like a day later, President Trump is – you know, was saying no more travel, you know, abroad, at least for a while. So I am curious of that, of how many went back, and, you know, Canada, same thing.
Speaking of,
it's not that you can't just, you know, if you live in, let's say, you know, Vermont, you can't just jump in a car and head across to Canada now, you know, unless it's essential.
Right.
Right. So you can't, even if you wanted to, it's not easy to get places right now. And I, you know, we know the reality is there's no incentive for the league to have to say, here's who's gone, here's who's here, because they're still not even close. When the time comes and they get some guidance on, okay, here's when you need to be back, they might have to tackle that, right? That might be part of, you know, the timetable is, okay, you know, we feel like in a couple weeks, if nothing changes, maybe we could gather and go train. But now let's look at how do we get everybody here? I had another question, too, and I don't know this, too, of are you allowed to skate? Like, if you have access to ice, can you go skate? There was some, you know, Seth
That's
Jones
a good
tweeted
yeah.
out, I think, you know, as part of his, remember, he had a bad injury. He broke an ankle, I think. He was out for several weeks. He's just now getting to the point where he can skate. So he was on ice somewhere, and I know that's probably part of his physical therapy, but how many guys are even trying to stay in shape and skate right now? That was part of the discussion I heard a lot yesterday afternoon is, and I think Matt Duchesne was quoted saying, you know, we need 3 weeks. We're going to need at least two, probably 3 weeks to ramp back up to where we could even think about playing a game once we get to that point.
Yep. I don't know. That's another thing I'd like to know. How many have had the opportunity to skate at all since all this went down? Don't forget, go to at 1025 The Game on Twitter and vote our bracket, our final four: Steve McNair, Shea Weber, Eddie George, Pacorine. Vote. You've got 7 more hours to do so. We will have our national champion, our championship game, I should say, not national, our Nashville champion. Our one shining moment tomorrow. We will vote a champ. Have a great rest of your day. Be safe, but enjoy it. And we will be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll talk to you then. Whiskey or beer, closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.